It's The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Up to 2 million people in the Gaza Strip are living without regular electricity, and the situation is putting pressure not only on residents, but also on the tense relations between Hamas, the militant Islamic group that rules Gaza, and the Palestinian Authority. Gaza's power comes from Israel, but late last spring, the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, asked Israel to cut the supply. It's part of a move by Abbas to pressure Hamas into relinquishing some political control in Gaza. Meanwhile, many parts of Gaza now only get power for 1 to 2 hours per day. Water is in short supply because desalination plants can't operate, and even hospitals are scaling back. Tariq Bokhony is a fellow at Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network, and he joins me now. Tariq, welcome.
Hi, Todd. Thanks.
What is the humanitarian situation now in Gaza with these power cuts?
Well, Todd, it's actually quite drastic. We had news emerging last night that they had the first 24-hour blackout within the Gaza Strip, which is exactly the kind of emergency situation we were expecting might happen after President Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank asked Israel to stop supplying Gaza with electricity. This is an escalation of a situation that has been quite drastic for a few years now. So for the past couple of years, Gaza has had about 4 hours of electricity per day, followed by 12-hour blackouts on a consistent basis. As you might imagine, this is a region the size of Philadelphia with 2 million inhabitants. So that kind of consistent blackout has resulted in daily life effectively grinding to a halt. When there are blackouts, people aren't able to leave their high-rises. They aren't able to commute to work. Students and pupils now study at night in candlelight with significant risk and fire hazards and risk to their health. We see sewage treatment plants now are no longer operational. 100 million liters of raw sewage is being dumped into the Mediterranean on an almost daily basis. Water desalination plants and water treatment plants are also not operational. So more than 90% of the water that's available in the Gaza Strip is not is contaminated. And perhaps most importantly is the impact on healthcare institutions and hospitals. So there are now about 80 generators within the Gaza Strip that are propping up life-saving equipment, including ventilation devices and cancer treatment and dialysis devices. Those generators are the last barrier to a total collapse. If these generators falter, we'll have a significant loss of life within hospitals.
But why did Mahmoud Abbas of the Palestinian Authority choose this moment and this tactic for this amount of pressure now?
There are a number of reasons for President Abbas choosing this moment to escalate. One of them, of course, is the sense that Hamas has been weakened. We need to look at the crisis within the Gaza Strip now through the lens of what's happening in the region. After President Donald Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia, we saw an escalation in the row between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Qatar is a major investor within the Gaza Strip and a major actor that's been able to prop up life and enhance the economy in Gaza. With Qatar now effectively out of the question in terms of its support for the Gaza Strip, President Abbas most likely made the calculus that Hamas now is in a much weaker position than it was when the Obama administration was still in office. And so the rationale is probably that escalating now on the Gaza Strip, and this electricity crisis is the latest in several steps that Mahmoud Abbas has taken. So the calculus is most likely that now Hamas is at its weakest and is likely to cede its control of the Gaza Strip. But that policy is both flawed and absolutely morally reprehensible. So it's unlikely to produce the outcome that President Abbas is looking for.
Tariq Bokhony is a fellow with Al-Shabaka, the Palestinian Policy Network. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.